You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith. This is The Comedian's Comedian. It's a sort of lifetime project. It's taken 8 years of my life and I'm never intending to stop. It's a project in which I try to get inside the creative processes of your favourite comedians, certainly my favourite comedians. So do scan the back catalogue and see if we've had... I'm forever getting tweets from people going, oh, you should do Barry Cryer. And I'm like, done him 3 years ago. Look it up. Today, I am talking to Ninia Benjamin, who is a phenomenal presence on stage, a very, very funny comedian. And I'm stressing that particularly because quite quickly in this conversation, we're going to get into the murky depths of Ninia's self-doubt. She's almost an archetypal thing about an archetypal thing. What a sentence. That started so highbrow and then got very lowbrow. My apologies. What I'm trying to say is that Ninia is a perfect example of how the phenomenal, floor-filling, roof-raising confidence of the expert comedian can coexist with the sense that one doesn't have anything to offer, anything to teach, that, and particularly, as Ninia will express in her case, that she feels she is not a proper comedian, which I cannot disagree with enough. And I'm going to spend over the next hour and a half, and there's a good 25 minutes or so of extra content on this show as well. The theme I will keep returning to is me convincing Ninia, or trying to unpick Ninia's certainty that she doesn't count and isn't a proper comedian. And I just want to stress before we go into this episode, the esteem in which Ninia is regarded by her peers. And she just really is an absolute phenomenon. So please go and see her live. You can catch her on social media, Instagram. She's done some very funny videos about some mentoring that she's been doing. She's on Instagram and Twitter, Ninia_Benjamin. Not Nina, Ninia with two I's. So with all of that said, and a cheeky little plug at the beginning for the tour, because I'm just into the very last few episodes. Dates, that's what they are. Corsham was a joy over the weekend. Thanks everyone that came and filled up the Pound Arts Centre in Corsham. I'm going to be at the Newcastle stand on the 1st of February, 2nd of February on the Glasgow stand. That's a Sunday, I suspect. Is that an early show? I'm not sure. Check the site for details. comedianscomedian.com/tour. Farnham Maltings on the 7th of February is very nearly sold out. And then the tour is concluding with York, the Basement, on the 11th of Feb. The 12th of Feb is Leeds, the Hyde Park Book Club. And on the 28th of February, Cambridge Junction for the colossal final show in the biggest room in which this show is touring. So please, if you're anywhere near Cambridge, make your way along there. It's sold very healthily at the moment, but it would be such a personal dream to sell that one out and finish this tour with a bang. It's been a long time in the writing, a long time in the performing, and I've enjoyed it enormously. So all of your details at comedianscomedian.com/tour. Now, let's get stuck into this proper, deep, properly good chat. Very proud of this one with Ninia Benjamin. Okay, here's where I want to start. It's taken me years to convince you to come on this podcast.
Yes, it has. Have we started?
Yeah, we started.
Is it recording?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. All right. It's taken you years.
It's taken a long time.
Yes.
I think, for me, one of the most fascinating aspects of you, like, I think you are a brilliant comedian. I think you are talented. I think you are skilled. And the things that people say about you are just things like force of nature, explosive. You know, you have that, like, for people who haven't seen you... Wow, I'm struggling to sort of find... This doesn't make sense. I was going to say, for people who haven't seen you, imagine someone like Terry Alderton.
Yeah.
But that doesn't work, because if they've seen Terry, they've probably seen you.
Yeah.
But it's that, for me, you're less about
scripting perfect sort of clever jokes, yes. and you're more just about the relationship between you and an audience
yes.
being absolutely electrifying.
100%.
Right? Yes.
100%, I agree with that.
Like, when you walk out on stage, everyone is like, wow, she believes in herself. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's part of it. Like, because what I'm getting at is the difference between that and me trying to convince you and say, come on the show. And you're like, what have I got to say? Come on the show. But you've had Jeff Innocent on. He's brilliant. Come on the show. So the difference between those things, that's where I want to start.
Okay. Yeah, well, we can... What... I just... You know, like, when you first... Well, I heard about comedians... podcasts, comedians. And I said, well, it's not for me. Because sometimes I don't see... Well, sometimes. I don't see myself as a comedian. And that's part of the problem, is that I don't actually see myself as this comedian. Because in my head... Comedians are these people who love the craft and hone their craft and give their all to their craft. And I don't do that. I go on stage and just be. Oh, that sounds so...
this is already gold, isn't it? I'm loving it.
Yes. It just, but I do. So, however, I recorded myself over two nights, right? And I'm hard to make laugh. But I watched myself and I went, oh my God, I see why people are laughing.
When was this? When was that?
So I was at Covent Garden Comedy Club on Friday, but I didn't record myself on Friday.
Then just, I was just at, gone. Yeah. Weekend just gone.
And then I was at Covent Garden Comedy Club on Saturday and I recorded myself on the Saturday. And then I was at Bent Double at Comedia on Sunday and I recorded myself again. And it's two totally different audiences. And I say that when I go on stage, I don't care about the audience. I should care. I do. I say that it's the audience has nothing to do with me. Really, I go out on that stage and I do what I'm doing. I do what I do, what I do, when I do and how I do it. I don't tailor myself to the audience. That is a misnomer. I love using words. It's because I love using words that I just want to go on stage and use these words. And sometimes I will say to people, I just want to use these words. I just want to say these words out loud. Like on Sunday, I talked about the Mayans. I know nothing about the Mayans. But I said I wanted to say the word Mayans because I'd read it and I just wanted to say Mayans on stage. Anyway, however, because there were two totally different audiences, I did tailor myself slightly to the audiences. I did, you know, looking back on it, I go, oh, Nini, you do. You have this perception, but you actually do tailor yourself to a degree to the audiences.
What? Just before we could just pause on that for a second, in what ways did you tailor yourself because of what kinds of audiences?
I tailor myself in the rapidity with which the words come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. So on Saturday, because it was very high energy right across with the acts, I was high and it came out, what are you saying? No, swear word, maybe not swear word. Brrr. Whereas on Sunday, because it had a Sunday vibe to it, there were a much quieter audience.
Okay.
I came out a lot more, hi, I'm much calmer. How you doing? This is a part of my personality to be calm, but I'm not always that calm.
Okay.
And then I went in to tell, you know, to tell all the lesbians and the gays, this is what my... thinking is, and I told the lesbians straight away, leave me alone. So started with, leave me alone, lesbians. Leave me alone. And I went from there. And that tells people this is what I'm about. See, my thing is to go on stage and go, this is what I'm about. This is, regardless of what you may see, I don't conform to what I look like. Whatever that means.
What does that mean?
Well, you know, I'm a very large black woman. People may have, and I'm using that thing what people do because I know that this isn't filmed, this is being recorded. So, you know, when you do your two fingers and you do exclamation marks, whatever, My philosophy is, when I stand on stage, if you don't know I'm a big black woman, that ain't my business. Because if you can't see it, I'm not about to explain to you what my blackness or my size has done anything. I'm about to explain to you what I am, and this is how I see things, and just go on my journey with me. But if you don't want to go on my journey with me, I don't mind. It's be all right. You will be all right. You know, I'm all about having a good time. I have to have a good time. That's my thing. I have to have a good time when I go on stage.
So you videoed yourself. Yeah. And when did you look back at it? Monday? Or after the gig?
It took me ages. Yeah, because I put it on and I said, ugh, I can't watch myself. And to just listen to my voice. Although I don't mind my voice, but just to listen to my voice. And I think, oh, I'm not going to be funny. And then my friend was listening to it and they were laughing. And I went, that's nice. They're really laughing at me. I went, okay. And then I went in the room and it was on and I started laughing. I said, oh my God, I'm funny. I'm really funny. I mean, like, I could take myself outside of myself and watch me. And go, oh, I see why people think I'm funny. I couldn't see that before.
You can't see that when you're actually doing it.
No,
I feel like I know what you mean, but to someone who isn't a comic,
yes,
listen to this, that experience of being on stage,
yeah.
People might think, well, obviously you know you're funny because they're all laughing. So what's the difference in listening back to it than doing it at the time?
The difference is that I can see why they're laughing, as opposed to I can hear them laughing and guessing, and then hearing the particular words or the particular sequence of words that I've said that makes it funny, because I don't know about the particular sequence of words I'm saying, because I'm a very much a improvisational, whatever is happening in the room, I can turn that around. But I don't know what it is about the way that I say things makes people laugh until I hear it back.
Gotcha.
So I now see why comics, you know, do all kind of fandangling to record themselves and position something and do this to record themselves, because they can look back and see, which I didn't ever see the benefits of that, even though when I first started I did record myself and hardly listened back to it, because I'd start listening and go, my voice, and turn it off.
So what you heard, you were like, oh, I am funny.
Yes.
What was the thing that made you laugh the most? What was the bit that you thought that's like your favourite way in which you're funny?
I think this I reckon it's just, what was it? There's so many bits. It was just the way I explained it. It's the way I explain why it's funny, even though I'm hearing back. So I will break down. I will go, audience, stop, without actually saying audience, stop.
Yeah, yeah.
This is what's going to be funny to these set of people. You people who won't find it funny, this is why you won't find it funny, but it's all right. You can still sit there and listen, because these other people are going to find it funny and you can relate.
Yes.
I do a lot of, you can relate.
You do a lot of that. You do a lot of splitting the audience up into like, these people are getting it, these people aren't.
And these are the right, these people are getting it. But don't you worry not getting it. Here's your chance to get it, so that you feel part of the gang. Because there's nothing worse than sitting in an audience and going, this is a load of old shite. Oh, have they not realised that I'm not laughing? I'm not, I can't relate. Oh, who cares? Gosh, you know, I wonder if the cells are still on with Marks and Spencer's.
Sure.
And all of that that's going through my head, sometimes it will come out of my mouth.
Okay.
And go straight to the
audience. That's such an effective way of working, because part of the problem with a gig going badly for some people is that their kind of brooding presence can kind of spread into, if not the rest of the audience, it can spread into the comedian. So I mean, you go, well, they're not liking it. And if you can make that completely explicit, as you do, and say, he's not enjoying it, they're not enjoying it, she loves it, that kind of thing. Is that born of necessity? Did you start doing that way back when because some people didn't like what you were saying?
See, as soon as you said that, I'm thinking of this gig where I walked off stage after 2.5 minutes when I first started. It was up in some pub in the West End around Soho somewhere. And I got on stage and the audience just was not feeling me and I weren't feeling them. And I couldn't get turn it around so that the audience would feel me. I didn't have the skills then. You know, I didn't have the skills at a year and a half in. And I just said, they're not having a good time. I'm not having a good time. Let me come off this stage. I'm just going, come off the stage, Ninya. And so I said, all right, ladies and gentlemen, you know, my name's Ninya Benjamin. Thank you very much. Good night. And it's like, what? What's he? And I just went about my business, you know. I just said, this is, what are you doing, Ninya? Why are you doing this? You could be back in Haringey Council, working for the council. Why have you given up all this work to come and try and make people you don't know laugh? You ain't no comic. And, you know, I had a lot of that going through my head. And so I've learned that sometimes if you just explain why you've gone left or right, they may go, oh, right, and put their comedic sat-nav on and follow you.
And you give them, if they're not enjoying it, you give them permission to sit there not enjoying it.
Yes.
But you've kind of quarantined them.
Yes. Oh, I never thought of that. Yeah, I do. I do. I just do. You know, it's hard to explain what I do because I don't even know what I do. Yeah. I kind of know what I do, but I don't know enough about what I do.
And do you think that contributes to the feeling that you mentioned earlier on that you're not like a proper comedian?
Absolutement. All this writing jokes and all that. You know, I tried doing that. And when I write, I just think I'm writing shit. It just doesn't translate. But I'm also very much not instinctive, you know, like spur of the moment kind of person. Mm-hmm. I'm a very much a spur of the moment, in the moment. I give some things thought, but I don't give that thought. So when I sit down and I try and write and put thought into it, it just looks like I've just written words on a piece of paper for the sake of writing words on a piece of paper, because as a comic, you're meant to write words on a piece of paper. Mm-hmm. And within those words, you find something funny. And my brain don't work like that. And that's because I used to be a training officer before.
Okay.
And there's relevance. And as a training officer, I had to train people on a computer program that the council bought. But you have to learn how to train people. There's three ways that people learn. They either learn by being shown. It's called theorist, some pragmatist, and another one. So like a theorist, give them the leaflet, they'll read it and go, oh, you do it like this.
Yeah.
They're great. There's a pragmatist. I'm a pragmatist. You've got to show me. You can't tell me.
Yeah.
Show me.
Yeah.
Show me how to do it and then I'll learn. And then there's the people in between. Mm-hmm. And so for me, it's all about the practicalness of it. So the writing in my head, it's like I cannot get out of my head that it's homework.
Yeah.
And I was rubbish at homework, so I left school with nothing.
Yeah.
No, not a qualification to my name. I only stayed on at sixth form because in fifth year 900, who knows this bollocks that they keep doing. In fifth year, I got unclassified right across the mark. I ain't passed up one exam. And there was no way my dad was letting me leave school. I didn't have a job. So I had to stay on to sixth form to see if I could salvage something. I didn't even do O-levels. I don't know if I was doing my CSEs again. And I stayed on for a year and learned nothing because school is writing.
Yeah.
And writing is school, and I can't break that. And I've tried breaking it, and I've tried writing. I can write poetry. Oh, I can write poetry. But writing is school. And that's where my block comes. Because I want to do a show. I've been doing this 20 years, you know. I can't believe it. 2000 I started. I actually started in 1999. In 1999 I started. But I was still working and I had a really good job, as in it was paying me good money.
Mm.
So I was getting open spots and that. but some I just wouldn't turn up to because I'm thinking, why am I travelling halfway across the world to do 5 minutes to come all the way back and then go to work? And so a lot of open spots, I just blew them out because I was working until they made me redundant.
Okay.
And then I thought, what am I going to do? So that's how, that was in 1999, and in 2000 I really took it serious. I really started going and going for the open spots and really doing them. I mean, my real proper open spot was at the Purple Turtle, just round the corner from where we
are.
Yeah,
yeah.
A lot of people did their open spots there, and I did my open spot there.
I want to come back to that moment of then starting properly, but just to stay for a minute with you at school.
Yeah.
Did you feel alone in, like, was anyone else held back for the, you know, for the sixth year, having like to try and salvage something?
Oh gosh, I have to correct you there. We're held back.
Oh, sorry, not allowed to leave. Sorry.
I just couldn't leave school and not do anything. Not with my mum and dad. No way. So my dad wasn't about to let me leave school after fifth year and go and hope and find a job.
Because some people did do that.
My dad wasn't going to let me do that, not under his roof, right? So I had to stay on. I had to stay on and do sixth form, right, until I could find, and I did find a job.
Because what you're describing there, it seems like the way you view yourself as a comic, as not proper, again, in inverted commas, is to do with, it's sort of disenfranchisement, right? Like, the way I see comedy, it's a broad church. Some people go there and they're, like, reciting a poem.
Right.
And some people go there and fuck. And they're all comedians. Yep. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's all allowed.
Mm-hmm.
But I wonder whether kind of, learning that lesson about yourself or being told that lesson about yourself, that you're not proper because it's all writing and you can't do writing.
Yeah.
It's incredible that that's persisted throughout, in the back of your mind, maybe.
Yes.
Throughout the whole of your career.
The whole of my career, my love.
Regardless of the successes, the ovations, the applause, do you know what I mean?
It's a fluke.
It's a 20-year fluke.
Yeah, because I see the comics that have become great, and I see the great comics, and they all have that they write and they go to gigs and try out new material, and something new comes to them and they go, oh my God, I can't wait. Has anybody got 5 minutes? Has anybody got a spare 10 minutes? I want to try out this new stuff. And I think, fucking hell, I don't do none of that shit. You know, and so therefore, I believe that I can't do it. Because I don't do it, I believe I can't do it.
And what's interesting to me is that, like, the underlying thing there's a parallel universe Ninia who's like, oh, they'll do it like that, and I do it differently, and that's fine.
Yes.
But this Ninia is like, they'll do it like that, and I don't do it like that, so I'm not proper.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean? Because there are, I know what you mean, but it feels like you've sort of fixated on the writing aspect of other comedians' success to ignore examples of people like Ross Noble, improvisers, someone like Terry Alderton, who, I mean, I'm sure he writes jokes, but it's about a live relationship with the audience in the same place for you.
Mm.
It's like you kind of discount those because you're busy proving your theory to yourself that you're not proper because they've all got notebooks.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, not that anybody has... Yeah, I've seen Ross Noble. I go, wow, I'd love to do that. Not thinking that I do that, because I don't give it that much thought. It's the truth is, I don't give comedy that much thought. And if I did give it that much thought, I just think, wow, if I just gave it that much thought. But I don't know how to give it that much thought. I just know, go on that stage and have a good time. Now, I must admit, I have learnt that over the time. Go on the stage, have a good time. Because Ninia, if you have a good time, they'll have a good time. In the beginning, I go on the stage and just make them laugh. Not realising that I had to be within it so there wasn't a consistency. When I first started, I'd have good gigs and really bad gigs. And then really bad gigs and good gigs. And then some good gigs, really bad gigs. And I didn't realise that was this relationship between not having a good time.
And that's a big lesson, isn't it? And it's the sort of thing that older acts might say to, or more experienced acts might say to newer acts, just remember to enjoy yourself, have a good time.
Yeah.
And you can just, you can see a newer act go, oh, well, obviously, and the message not go in.
No.
Because it's like a deep, it's like one of the big secrets, really, that you have to, that if you want to, if that's the kind of comic you are, you've got to embrace that rather than just like be told it.
Exactly. And I think that sometimes, because I do say to newer comics, you know what? I mean, you say, go and have a good time. I said it to somebody recently. I said, fuck them. Yeah? And go out there and fuck them audience. And, yeah, you just have a good time. Fuck them. What they want is what you want. That's my philosophy, to know what I want. I want to know what I want for myself. And in the last, particularly in the last year and a bit, I've been really enjoying myself. And how I know I'm enjoying myself, I still wear my comics watch, my very first one. I've had loads of them, but Gina gave me my very first one, the Casio vibrating watch every comic knew you could get it in at Argos, $29.99. Now you could only get them on eBay, you know. But when the watch vibrates and I go, okay, that's near the end of my set. And then when I do eventually come off, I go, how long did I do? And twice I've done 50 minutes. I go, what? I don't do 50 minutes, Stu. I don't do 50 minutes. I do 20 minutes, 25 at a push. 50 minutes, and that's when I know, that's when I don't want to come off the stage. That's when I know that something has changed there, which has led me to wanting to do me. But I don't know how to do me. Oh, I just, me holds on to bollocks, right? Makes that bollocks ruminate around in my head. That then can sometimes stifle me. And it's to find a way.
Bollocks, you mean the kind of negative?
Yeah, you know, just the stuff going through my head. I did an hour at the Camden Edge once. I said, well, I'm going to do an hour. I've never done an hour. I ended up crying on the stage, not being funny, not being me, putting on a radio voice because it felt like I'm going to put on a radio voice. That's it. When I write, it feels like a radio voice. And a radio voice is, hello, good evening, and welcome to the news at 10 on Radio 4. And that's a radio voice. It's not real. It's
And that's because you'd written for the hour.
Because I'd written
for
the hour.
So you tried to recite the hour you'd written.
Yeah.
And that's not what you do.
And it was awful. And I was like, well, I don't know what this... It just wasn't me. And then I started talking about me. I said, talk about me. And then I was going, oh, I'm not even interested. Okay, but I started talking about me. And then I was going, oh, I just wait to be funny. And I just started crying on stage. Like, this is the worst crap ever. And that's held in my head for me to go, Ninya, do something more. Because fans, and I have them, fans always say, Ninya, we'd like you to do, when are we going to see you doing longer? And I always think, well, when am I going to do longer? I don't know. I see, you know what it is, right? I'm a jumper. Mr. Holding, my pottery teacher in secondary school, called me a grasshopper. And I do jump from subject to subject. And that's how my brain jumps from subject to subject to subject to subject to subject. And I don't know how to make my brain put all them things that I jump from together to be coherent. So when I'm on stage, I have to let these people know straight away, I will jump straight away, because if they're trying to follow some thread I'm doing, they're going to get lost, because I will move away from that thread. And or unless I say, look, put that thread in a box, let's go to this one. I might come back to this one. I have to tell them.
So this is Ninya. I love being in her company. I love how funny she is, how naturally funny, how I love how much self-belief she has. And I love how honest she is willing to be about those times when she doesn't feel that self-belief. It drives me up the wall that someone who I think is such a brilliant, brilliant act can have this. And it comes to us all. This is it. This is part of the mission statement of this show, you know. Almost every comic I've ever spoken to has moments, whether persistent and frequent or infrequent, of self-doubt, of just doubting that oneself is the right person for the job. Ninia is the right person for the job. She is just, she's an ecstatic comedian to watch. So please seek her out live or wherever you can. And we will get back into this conversation soon. If you are a member of the Insiders Club, then you can, and if you're not, you can join comedianscomedian.com/insiders with a very small regular donation to the show. They start at £2 a month, but there's a slider and you can go up as much as you want and pay according to your means if that sort of thing turns you on. But everyone gets the same stuff, right? Socialism. Is that socialism? I don't know. Benevolence. But you can join at comedianscomedian.com/insiders. And if you are a member or become one by the time this episode ends, then you can access 25 minutes or so of extra content with Ninia. We are going to talk more about her writing for Will Smith on the Aladdin movie, writing gags for Will, and what she sang to him. I bet you can guess. And also, we will get a bit further into some stuff. You know, every so often with the Insiders content, if I feel I've put my foot down hard on a particular theme in the interview, sometimes I'll take it out and put that in the Insiders section because I don't want to batter the casual listener over the head with it, but I think there's some good stuff to be got from there. We talk in detail about, it's not about me convincing Ninia to go to Edinburgh, it's about convincing her that if she wanted to, it is possible. And I try to suggest we have a conversation about some different ways in which a comic of her nature could get the most out of a director. So there's some quite specific insidery stuff there. So comedianscomedian.com/insiders for that. Do go to comedianscomedian.com/tour if you would like to see me in those final few places. And I'm hammering this hard because it's nearly done. I don't think I'm going to tour next year. So this will be the last time you have to put up with it. And honestly, forgive me if you are also getting a dynamic insertion ad this episode that tells you the tour stuff. I can't not tell you the tour stuff because some of you aren't getting the dynamic ad. I'll explain why later if you can be bothered to listen. But Newcastle Stand, Glasgow Stand, Farnham Maltings, York The Basement, Leeds Hyde Park Book Club and the Cambridge Junction all within February. comedianscomedian.com/tour. It's a big old 2-hour show with an interval and I've been absolutely loving it, and there is some roaringly good new stuff in the second half, so look forward to that. That's everything. I'll chat to you briefly after the rest of this conversation with Ninia Benjamin.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I never watched Three Non-Blondes when it was on TV, right. But I've revised it. Some people have sort of seen some clips. Fucking hell, it made me laugh.
Bless
the
you.
The two, you and I couldn't tell who the other one was because it was a very far away camera, but two being tampons with wings outside the steps. Or so. I was watching that on the way here on the tube train over ground, so I had a signal. I was crying laughing and everyone on the tube train was looking at me. It was so funny.
It's funny because with Three Non-Blondes, you know, so because we all brought something different to the show. And for me, I just always wanted to push the boundaries of what a larger woman can do. So, you know, one of my biggest heroines at the time was Bella Enberg on the Russ Abbott show.
Yeah.
Blunder Woman. And it wasn't that she was Blunder Woman. It was that Bella put on the little hot pants shorts, and she's a big old piece of girl, yeah? She put on the hot pants shorts and she did the Wonder Woman outfit and she didn't care. And I went, good for her. And that's what I wanted to do. So if you watch a lot of Three Non-Blondes, you'll find that half the time I'm half naked, near naked, getting naked. Although I don't have that confidence, I had the confidence to do that because I just wanted to push a boundary that would, you know, the chubby girl isn't just a chubby friend being in the background, that she would go and do these things. Just wanted to do that. And now when I look at Three Non-Blondes, I think, God, if I could only be that weight again, you know, because I was put on some weight since then. But in the time, that was what I wanted. I just wanted to push the boundaries. The fact that we were three black women doing this didn't even come into what for us, you know. It was just that we wanted to be three women being funny on telly who just happened to be black.
And when, what years was it coming?
This is, so you're looking at around 2002, 2003. 2004.
So you've been going for about 2 years.
And how I even got Three Non-Blondes is just amazing. So I hadn't been going that long, and they get television production people to come and watch acts, people being funny, to see what development they could do. And they needed the MC, and so I was the MC. I'd never MC'd really in my life. Had all these television production people. I've actually got the recording. I tape myself. That's when I used to tape myself. Yeah. Didn't know what to say to these people. Didn't know anything about that side because I'd come from a real work, real 9-to-5 work. And there were all these television producers. I goes, I don't know what to say to you lot, so I'm going to get you lot to count to 10. And these television people actually counted to 10. There's no joke in it. But they sat there and it goes, I said, this is count to 10. And they counted to 10. I can't believe they counted to 10. And Gary Reish, who made Three Non-Blondes, got us together almost like Spice Girls. Gary Reish was in the audience and just said, there's something about you I really like, and got loads of us together. And we workshopped it to it then narrowing down to me, Jocelyn and Tamika, and that's how we became the Three Non-Blondes, and that's how I got it. I hadn't been going that long, and he just said,
and then would you pitch ideas for things to each other?
We would pitch ideas. First of all, we thought about doing a sketch show, and then we thought about doing a sitcom, then we thought about doing a soap opera, and we filmed, and then I think it was Gary said, why don't you just try doing some hidden camera? And so we snuck onto the tube, you know, because you had to get permission to film and all of that. And we did some little tiny sketches and put it together. And out of all of these companies, BBC liked us, and they really liked the hidden camera stuff. And then we went away and made a half an hour pilot, and they loved it, and the rest is...
And how long did it go for?
It made 2 seasons. We did two series, and we did a Christmas special as well. So it only did 2 series. And that was from when BBC Choice turned over into BBC Three.
Gotcha.
Yeah, okay. So it was around that time.
And just to kind of underline something that's probably obvious.
Yeah.
Because they were hidden camera stunts where you would walk out and improvise and play with people and provoke people and be stupid and try to get a reaction, there was no actual writing involved. You never had to be writing equals homework during that process.
No, because the ideas that I came up with were always visual. So no, there was no real, okay, let me write this down, and you have to, because you cannot... preempt what a member of the public is going to say, so you can't write for them.
Sure.
You know, you can only write the idea of a sketch or a skit or something that you're going to do. So I would always come up with anything visual. So the tampons, actually, I said, I just came up with, I just want to dress as a tampon and walk through the street as a tampon and go, you know, helps with flow. You know, just, so I was very visual in that.
So,
you know?
but that, I put it to you, was an example of you being creative and funny without writing anything, and yet it was legitimate, right? You felt like, oh, this is real, this is allowed, this is proper.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you can put it to me. Yes, you can put it to me, and you have. put it to me, and I have to, you know, kind of eat back some of my words there. But yeah,
no, I mean, I'm not. Yeah. I'm not.
You're right.
So much as to say, look, there's a way that you've been really fun and legitimate, and you were in a kind of creative state of mind there where you weren't worrying about not being proper.
No.
As a result, it was really successful and fun.
Yes.
Funny.
Yes, that is true. I know. It's true. It's like, oh my God. You know, that is true.
And then were you doing stand-up? Were you on the circuit as you were doing that?
Oh, yeah.
Or being on the circuit?
No, I was on the circuit. Not as much because we would go away filming. But I would still keep my hand in with doing the odd gig every now and then. You know, I would maybe at least gig every 2 weeks as opposed to weekly. So, yeah, I still kept my hand in. And it didn't, to me, it didn't impact on my stand-up because that was a separate entity because I was still in the head of, I used to dress all in black. I used to wear a long black leather coat. I was, gosh, the epitome of angry person, shy. So I still was transitioning to somewhere where I was a lot more comfortable being on stage. It wasn't as comfortable being on stage in the beginning. I didn't find my voice. Gosh, there's a tag. But I didn't find my voice. I didn't find my voice till, and Sean Mayo said this to me, he goes, Nina, when I was worrying about a gig that hadn't gone well, Nina, you don't find your voice till 10 years. I went, 10 years? I'm like, I'm just going to be doing this for 10 years. Here I am, 20 years, 21 years this year. But I did find my voice, and I really, truly found my voice in 2013. That's when I really found my voice in 2013, after 2013, because 2013 was my anus horriblest. And I say anus horriblest is because that's what the Queen called it, didn't she? When the year after Diana died, she said, this is my anus horriblest. I was like, that's anus horrible, isn't it? So I had an anus horrible in 2013. Okay. It's awful. It's just I didn't know what was happening to me. I was in my head and was not a good time in my life, really. Gigs went south. And I remember it clearly. I remember it changing. And I had a gig, and I can tell you where it was. It was for Crack Comedy, and it was when they used to have the one near London Bridge.
Yes.
And before that time, I used to be full makeup, titty out the door, right? So when I say titty out the door,
what does that mean?
It means that I would, high heels, all sexy, you know, push-up bra, nice cleavage showing, nice décolletage showing, full face makeup, hair done, everything, right? I used to go out on stage like that. Would never not go on stage in flat shoes and trainers. You mad. Wore me high heel shoes, all of that. It's going through a particularly bad time, and I had this gig that you didn't want to do the gig, but, you know, you had to do the gig, and I went, fuck it, and I went in a tracksuit, and I went there prepared to die on my ass. Right,
because you weren't wearing your.
I wasn't wearing my armor, and I went out in a tracksuit, just my hair, just, and I went. These people are going to not laugh at me, and I remember going on stage. Oh, hi! I remember going. I don't want to fucking be here, and they laughed. I said, "What the fuck?" And I meant it was coming from my soul because I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do. I'm in a tracksuit. Who the fuck fucking performs in a tracksuit for fuck's sake when you're overweight and you hardly look like somebody who wears a tracksuit professionally? And these people were laughing. And I, in my head, I went, oh, it's nothing to do with the makeup. It's nothing to do with how you look, Nina. It's nothing to do with that. It's about what comes out of your mouth. And that was a turning point for me. Actually, that desperation, that point of I'm going to just give up this stand up. I think I still know enough about housing because that's where I came from, that I can get something in housing. I still know friends. This is where I was. I was at a point where friends are still in housing. Somebody can get me a job. I can do filing. I was at that point, and I. Yeah. Just this gig came up, which I was desperate for because I didn't have no gigs, and this gig came up. I didn't want to go because I just didn't think that I had anything to say to anybody. I was useless. And that was a turning point. I mean, oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Wow. Because I'm a doubting Thomas. I'm a seeing is believing person. I really am. I've got to see it. I've got to feel it. And, you know, I'd seen other comics go on stage, not female comics, not all tidied up. And I'd seen other comics go on stage in their trainers and all of that. But I was going, yeah, but they're real comics and they write and so they can do that. Because you're not a real comic, Ninya. You go on your personality, Ninya. You have to have these checklists because of your personality to enhance your personality so that people will find you funny. That was what was in my head. And so I was at a real low point then, a real, real low point, for it to then just come and give me that. It's like, rah. Yeah, and it slowly built because, you know, I lost... And this is a part of my career history. A lot of clubs stopped booking me. So I was doing really well and then a lot of clubs stopped booking me.
Do you know why?
Well, I mean, straight away, I'm going to go to, well, I just thought I weren't funny. You know, but I don't know. I could have fallen off the radar. I had changed. I had a very good agent. I no longer had that agent. And so they gigs from the bigger clubs just dried up, and it was just a dark period. That's why I give a lot of props to Stephen Grant, because throughout that Stephen Grant still booked me for Comedian and still booked me to close at the Comedian. You know, I've been a closer for a long time, but he still booked me out of, and I always give a lot of props to Stephen for every now and then this sort of beacon of light would come in where I'd get a decent paying gigs, and that hurt for a long time. And that also fed into, well, you're not a real comic. You know, the reason it's nothing to do with, nothing to do with you're not here or you're not there. It's because you're not a real comic and you're not really funny. I don't know why they're booking, you know, and all of that narrative was going on in my head. And I had to fight that. And I
think we've established you're someone that's particularly vulnerable to that narrative.
Yes.
Because I think we very much include you, we comics.
Yeah.
I think, you know, anyone in any creative field is constantly thinking, oh, God, is this enough?
Yeah.
Look at what they've got. Look at how they're doing. Yeah. All of those sorts of things.
Yeah.
And I think you strike me as someone who is particularly vulnerable to your own negative.
Oh, my gosh. My old negative head. Oh, you want to just... Sometimes I want to punch my negative head in the bloody in its negative head. But, yeah, you know, in particular, you know, why we choose comedy, you know, and I didn't choose comedy, comedy chose me, but why we choose comedy to do this thing that just constantly on this treadmill of this and this until you get on that stage. Until I get on that stage. I mean, I could be pacing up and down until I get on that stage. I get on that stage and it...
So just to look at this timeline for a second, 2013, you felt like you found your voice. Now, I've been looking at videos in the last couple of days of you in 2007, and I feel like I recognise Ninya.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yes, looking back, you've got, you know, you're like that hair is very on point and you're...
Yes.
I don't notice things like makeup, I'm afraid to say, but...
But I'm in high heel shoes, that's
sure.
The one.
Okay. Yeah, you're dressing.
Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What was the expression? Tits out of door?
Oh, titty out of door. Titty out of door, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But in terms of the material, like on both of those, I can think of two particular clips where Al Murray walks out and goes, ladies and gentlemen, you know, pin back your ears.
Yeah.
This is going to be filthy.
Yeah.
You know? And then you'd walk on and do, you know, that kind of Ninya Benjamin, I'm a dirty bitch kind of thing.
Which is Russell... Blonde one, Howard.
Yeah.
His favourite opening. He goes, it's his favourite opening.
I've had
so many comics do that of all time. You know, he tell me about Russell that. And Sean Walsh, I've got a video of Sean Walsh doing me. First time. And he goes, do me, I've heard about you doing me. And he does this walk on stage. That's right. I'm a dirty bitch. I was like, oh my God, it's hilarious to hear somebody jive and do my voice, you know. But yeah.
So, yeah. So if that was pre a time when you felt that you found your voice,
yeah.
Does that, do you kind of, I don't know quite what I'm asking, but like, did it, did that still, do you still feel good about that? Like, to me, that's like, oh, that's classic Ninja, right? But did it feel like you were putting something on to do that at the time?
No!
Well, then maybe you found your voice earlier than you thought.
Maybe I did find my voice, but I didn't accept my voice then. I didn't accept my voice because, you know, people go, oh, she's so dirty. And I'm like, I'm not a fucking dirty comic. And she said, but I didn't think I accepted my voice then. I accept my voice now. Listen, now. When I step on that stage, I also just let them know, listen, you better hold on to your panty liners because I don't take no prisoners. This is me, ladies and gentlemen. And comedy is subjective. And this is what I do. See, it's like, and I love this word, it's a fucking dichotomy. It is. Because on one hand, I exude this confidence, which I do, and they both sit equally on my shoulders. I exude this confidence of, I don't know what I'm saying. And then on the other hand, I'm like, fucking hell. Please just listen to what I got to say. It'd be funny. I don't know this kind of, this other side going, Nina, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. You ain't, blah, 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 blah. And you're like, girl, just fucking go out and then fuck them. If he don't want to laugh, tell him come out of the people then place, which I have been told, which I have been known to say to a punter. You don't want to listen to me, then come out. Come the fuck out of the place and let people laugh who want to laugh and go to the back of the room. I do that. That's because I can do that. I can do that because I have skills. So weird. Because I have the skills to pull it back. If I go there,
yeah.
I have the skills to pull it back so that people don't. I haven't alienated the audience by getting angry on stage.
Yes.
Which when I first started, I would get angry on stage and I wouldn't know how to come out of being angry and just be angry person on stage. I always think that, like, I don't give advice to comics. So I have to really, I don't give advice to comics because I believe that they don't want to hear the advice coming from me. They would like to hear that advice. Like, if Ian Stone tells them that, or if, I don't know, you know, some other prolific, you know, Ian Moore, the fucking Ians, or, you know, Sally Ann Hayward, or Janie Godley, or, you know, if one of them tells them that, they want to listen. But who? Ninia Benjamin, who ain't even fucking done Edinburgh yet? I ain't going to listen to you. What's she fucking done? She can't even get onto the... Well, mind you, I am on the Comedy Store now. She can't even... She doesn't do this gig. She doesn't do that gig. So I tend to not give comedians any advice or anything because I believe that they ain't going to want to hear from me. And that is that... Because when you, you know, I just, yeah.
Because you...
It's bollocks.
I think the thing is, you have already shared a load of stuff about your process through it, and you're being honest about your feelings. You're being honest about, sometimes I feel like this, sometimes I feel like that.
Yeah.
That is sharing something. That is a pearl of wisdom.
Yeah.
You know, people can listen to... You know, whoever, they can listen to the episode with Joe Caulfield if they want to learn about writing a sort of pithy, spiky, acerbic one-liner. And if they want to learn about what it's like to walk on and go, I'm a fucking dirty bitch, and like, well, you know, what that means to you to be able to say that to a crowd of posh people who shop at Waitrose and not alienate them and kick someone out and get angry and not alienate them.
Yeah.
That's the stuff that people can learn from this. So, and that's all valid stuff.
Yes. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you're right, because that is my thing. My thing is completely, right? And this is where I take on my evangelicist, whatever it is. My thing is to make audience want to come back to live stand-up comedy. That is my main goal. This is my fucking bread and butter. I am not yet a theatre touring comic. My bread and butter is in the clubs. And if you're shitting fucking clubs, they will go, let me add an extra £15 onto this ticket, go to a stadium and watch the 5, 6, 7 main comics and not come down to the fucking clubs. And so if I don't give a good account for myself, right, I'm doing comedy a disservice, because what will happen is if we don't have fucking bums on seats, people ain't going to come back. And that's one of my biggest bugbear, when you have some bills or some comics who haven't learnt the 10-year rule, or who don't want to find their voice, who haven't found their voice yet, but because the way that the comedy industry is, they find that they're on a night out with, bigger comics, or comics have been going longer, or comics who have got something to say and have got something to say, but don't know how to fucking say it yet, and lose the fucking audience, who go, fuck me, what a shit night this is. I ain't coming back to comedy again. And some people and some comics are not aware of that. But that's my whole, that is another thing that I've learned, that, make them laugh. Not every comic wants to make them laugh. And there are comics who are really good at not necessarily having people laughing all the way through, yeah? But they have people engaged. Not every one of you fucks can engage people.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you don't know how to fucking engage people, you better be fucking funny.
You think of Reg Hunter telling a story that's like a 10-year story with no laughs.
John Godillo. Exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah. There's loads of comics who do that, but not every one of us can do that fucking shit. I ain't one of them comics who can do that shit, yeah? And that's from being a circuit comic, and I want the circuit to continue. And in order for the circuit to continue, there has to be some self-awareness. There's not enough self-awareness out there at the moment. I'm aware of my capabilities. I'm aware of my limitations. But the main thing I want audience to do is to go, what good fucking night. I really enjoyed that. Oh, for me, if they want to talk about what I got to say, then I will say it. Like the other night, I said, this is going to be a water cooler moment, right? For those of you who know, for the rest of you, ain't going to talk about shit, but that don't matter. So that's my whole raison d'etre at the moment, is to just be as good as I can, and to be as good as I can is to have as much fun as I can, and to have as much fun as I can to a degree I can't care about you, but I do care about you. It's all intertwined. It's like a magic potion. It's like a big melting pot. Really.
Coming out of 2013, yeah, a horrible year,
yeah,
when you started to put yourself back together.
Yeah.
And I feel like I knew you a little bit before then.
Yeah, you did.
Kind of, you knew it. And then we've kind of corresponded. We've been together here and there.
Yep.
And we did. I remember we did Watford Jonglers.
Oh, my days. I knew. Yeah. What that day at Watford Jonglers. Lord have mercy. Was I the MC?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lord.
But I think through that, like that, your process of rebuilding yourself,
yeah,
what advice would you give to other comics who are right now in the middle of an annus horribilis? Who are thinking, fuck it out, I can't do this, what am I playing at? You know, nonetheless, they've been making money, they've been doing gigs. Now, I don't mean like newbies wondering whether they can do it, but you would be amazed, or maybe you wouldn't, at the sheer volume of comics who have at some point, I include myself in it, gone through a moment of going, what am I even doing? How did you get out of that? And is there anything transferable that you could say, this is what helped me, remembering this helped me, or thinking about it in this way helped me?
I would honestly say to them to don't care. To really, that was the only thing that helped me. I would say to go, look, you're not getting the fucking gigs anyway. So I wasn't getting the gigs anyway. Right. And the few that my gigs were so far between, right? I was living on a hope and a prayer. Okay. That day when I did not want to go on gig and I said, I don't care. I just brought I don't care to the stage. And it's amazing how the don't care-ness came forth into a voice. And I would say to anybody who is going through this, I can't get gigged. What am I doing? I'm doing this and I'm doing that. Chuck that all away and just go on stage and be honest. Because you ain't got the fucking gigs anyway. So are you killing up yourself to do them gigs that you ain't got just to be honest? Right? Be honest and look for a real fucking job, because that's what I was doing. And there's something about going on that stage and going, this is my fucking life right now, that frees you, because you don't care about the loss. I didn't care. I cannot explain to you, Stuart, how I did that day. It was a Saturday. I did not care. If somebody gone, fucking get off, you unfunny cunt. I would have gone, you're right, mate. You're right, I'm off. I just didn't care. Because when I looked in the diary, there was no fucking gig coming for 5 weeks. I would have 5 week gaps at a time. And it was at that point that I stepped on that stage in my tracksuit, right, that... It just went, oh, you do have a point of view and you do have a voice. And I built up, and I just built up from there. So my next gig, because I was all comfortable, because the other thing about dressing up and having your titty out is you've got to wear a bra that digs into you, you've got to wear a girdle. So if you're fat, if you ain't fat, you've got to cut this bit out. If you're not fat, you ain't going to understand. But you just imagine, right, if you're, you... are wearing a pencil skirt if you're a girl, or you're wearing a big tight suit with the tie right up there and the shirt slightly too small, and you're having to do that, and then you can actually go to your meeting or to your gig without having the top button done, if that's how you want to quantify it. That's what I did. It was like I went on stage without wearing a pencil skirt. I just was so comfortable, which meant that the next gig I went to, I went, oh, it worked with this one. I'm going to try it. And I did. And I went on in a tracksuit, but this time I made the tracksuit match. You know, at least look half decent, you know, as opposed to tracksuit bottom and a different top. And I was more comfortable on stage, physically comfortable. So I was physically able to move. And I would say to just do that. What have you got to lose? It's when we know we've got something to lose that it makes us stick. So if you ain't got nothing to lose right now because you're going for a shit time, then just go and do your truth. And so that's what I would, that's, you know, if I can give you any pearls of wisdom, do it anyway. That's what I would say. Do it anyway and see where it goes and look for a fucking job. Go and work in B&Q. Find a part-time job and go and work in B&Q. If right now you ain't making fuck all money from stand-up comedy and you was making the money. Because the thing is, Stuart, I was making really good money. You know, I'd had 3 non-blondes. I was on telly. Okay, it was all celebrity-led bollocks, right? But I was on telly.
You did do a lot of celebrity shows, didn't you?
Yeah, but not the main ones. You know, everybody keeps going, what did you do?
Before it really broke out into what it is now.
In order to do the big ones, right, yeah. And the 2 big ones were Celebrity Big Brother. And when I say the big ones, I'm talking about Give You Some Fucking Money.
Yeah.
Celebrity Big Brother and Celebrity Dancing and Celebrity I'm a Celebrity Get
Yeah.
You had to have a certain amount of fame at one point in order to not have it anymore to do that. I just missed out on a certain amount of fame. Yeah, 3 non-blondes as well, done well, but I didn't have that main fame like if I had my own stand-up show on telly. So it's hard to get into those. So I couldn't even get into any of those, but I was making good money and I went to making... am I going to pay my mortgage money? That's how I went from there to there. And I just said, you know, I can always fall back on getting a real job. You know, I've been so close to getting a real job, real working 9 to 5. I can't help myself getting a real job. So that's what I got to say.
I suppose when I heard that you weren't working or you were, you know, you were struggling, maybe it was a touch with you.
I suppose my kind of pet theory at the time was that, like, if there's a reason, what's the reason people aren't booking Ninian?
Yeah.
I thought, well, surely it can just... I mean, A, the circuit massively contracted around the time. It had just contracted around the time we're talking about. So gigs that would have five nights over the weekend now had went down to, like, one. Three or two, then one. So there's less work around. Why would someone not want Ninian? I thought, is it just that it was... that you were too dirty? That people's sensibilities had changed? From the early 2000s, later in the decade, people's sensibilities had changed. Mm-hmm. Was it that they associated you with 10 years ago? Do you know what I mean? So that they kind of, they hadn't made that mental bridge of, she's still, you know, maybe it's just there's so many comics coming in.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not just still on the books. Maybe you've sort of fallen off the radar, all those kind of things. Now it occurs to me, I don't know if any of those were true. I'm never in a position to book anyone. But I wonder if now, if that dirtiness was an aspect, I wonder if now it's retro. So, do you know what I mean? Maybe there is the appetite for it more now?
No. It's not even that. No, I don't think it's that. It's because I didn't believe it. So, yeah, you may have seen me on, because a lot of people go look at the Edinburgh and Beyond and all of that, which had the big, I love a big stage, okay? Sure. So I come from an acting background. So you give me a stage. Oh, my God, I'm on fire. Okay, I'm on fire on that big stage. The stage itself gives me lights with the stage and the curtain and all of that and the lights. And I love that, you know, the theatre. However, what I believe was that there was a little innate something that didn't give me a real voice behind it. I was saying those words for... I'm not totally that kind of comic, but I was saying those words to just say those words, and there was nothing behind it. Yeah, there's nothing behind it, then it just sounds like words, and it could be that. It could, and I think that when you see me on stage, some were going with me, but some weren't, because not even I believed it, do you know? And I believed that that had an impact as well. And because I wasn't, they wouldn't see my name at this club or that club, because I don't want to mention the clubs, right? But because they wouldn't see my name at that club or this club, they also go, oh, maybe she stopped doing it. Yeah. You know, if you're doing little tiny clubs that pay you 80, 90 pounds all the time as your main night, you're not going to, and they're these bigger clubs and you're not doing them, you fall off the radar. So that was it. I fell off the radar because I stopped doing those bigger clubs. Also, that I didn't believe, and it came, it transpired, it was, somehow it transpired into not really believing what came out of my mouth, right?
And if there's one thing your sort of act can't do, it's stop believing in yourself.
Exactamundo, even though sometimes I'm going, I know why the, sometimes I will ask audience, why the fuck are you laughing? I don't know what you're laughing at. And that makes me laugh that they're laughing at, I don't know what they're laughing at, but I love that they're laughing. You know, so that all changed. And right now, I know who I am. There's a confidence about me that I'm loving. A freedom. That's it. There is a freedom I have on stage now that I'm in love with. An absolute freedom. Doesn't always work when I go on first, because I... sometimes go boom, and I've literally knocked them out. Not all the time, but sometimes. But there's just a freedom I have on stage now. And so, and what's happening is that my freedom is trickling out there, and my name is going out, you know.
I need to ask you one final question to wrap things up. This has been brilliant. I love talking to you. I hope you're going to walk away as happy with this as I am.
I don't know, Stewie.
What do you want out of comedy in the future, long term? Like, what's the best thing that could happen for you in comedy?
What I want out of comedy, you know, I want to squeeze as much fun. Ultimately, I want to squeeze as much fun out of being on that stage and making people I don't know laugh. And that's important. That's important because these strangers paid their good fucking money, you know. They paid their good money to come and watch comedy. And I want them to just have as much fun and love comedy as I do, and as much fun as I have when I'm on stage. Because, you know, man, when I'm having fun, it's just a, man, it's a trip and a half. When I'm having a good time, people, hold on, because we're going to, it's like being on the best roller coaster ride or best, whatever is your best thing. And I want that out of comedy and to be in a film. Because I can't lie. I want to be in a film. I want to be in more films. I just want people to go, Ninia Benjamin, and have that glee in their voices. Ninia Benjamin. That's what I want out of comedy, to bring glee. And hope and joy. Not hope. Fucked hope. Not hope. But joy. Bring fucking joy. Let people want stand-up comedy to bring joy. And that's what I want. With a lot of words, I want fun. I'm going to stop saying words now.
So that was Ninia. Just a joy. Just a joy. God, I could hug her and I could shake her as well. She's so fabulous. Please try and see her live. She's on top form at the minute, and I'm really excited to see what she does next. So Ninia_Benjamin on Twitter and Instagram. I myself am on Twitter and Instagram at ComComPod, and indeed at Stu Goldsmith on Twitter. And I had my first ever what's the word for, like, the smallest version of viral. It got like 500 likes, which It's not a big deal, because I don't use social media very often, but it is one of those things you go, oh, I turned it off because I'm terrible at Twitter. So I tweeted what I thought was a funny thing, and then, you know, didn't look at Twitter for 2 days because it's not my habit, and then turned it on a Monday, and the first reply I got was Ian Sterling. Hello, Ian. Comedian Ian Sterling saying, now that's a tweet, take the afternoon off. And I thought, what's all this? And then I saw the reaction that it had. So you can follow me at Stu Goldsmith if you'd like one joke every 6 months, or at ComComPod on Twitter and Instagram to keep up with who's coming up on the show. And if you really want to know in advance what's going on, there's two ways you can do that. You can join the Comedians Comedian Facebook group, which remains, I mean, with 7,000 people and zero dickheads, it remains an extremely nice corner of the internet. And it's full of really worthwhile chat. I ask for questions about stuff. I ask for questions to give guests. There's little sneak previews of guests that are coming up on the show. And there's polls about your favourite episodes, and also comedy news, and a staggeringly polite and intellectual isn't maybe the right word, but certainly polite and informed amount of debate about current things going on in comedy, with, as I said, zero dickheads. The kicking boots have been employed very rarely of late, because everyone has been behaving themselves impeccably. So if you're in that, thank you for being in it. And then the other thing, of course, is if you join the Insiders Club, then you get into the real dirty strategy stuff, and me using a workspace app to ask you all, should I do this? Should I do that? Has this joke been done before? And that's all kind of like, that's so far behind the curtain as to be, I mean, I don't want to say intimate. There's nothing is exchanged besides thoughts, but it's, you know, it's not for the casual listener. Let's call it that. So thank you for downloading this episode. Get your skates on for the tour. See Ninia. And just remains to say thank you to Ninia herself. Thanks for coming along, being so brave and being so honest. Thank you to Angel Comedy for their kind loan of some podcasting recording space. Go to angelcomedy.co.uk and see the brilliant things that they are. I mean, if you're a comedy fan in London and you're not on their mailing list, what are you playing at? Because it's just full of, like, oh, Simon Amstel's dropping in for a special thing with 30 tickets. Fancy it? Bang, gone, sold out. It's definitely worth getting involved in that. And they do a writing gym as well. And I don't think one is supposed to say in advance when one is being the tutor or the workshop leader for the writing gym, because they don't want to fill it with fans. But I'm doing one at some point. No one's going to tell you which one it is. So if you are a writer, an aspiring or working or improving comedy writer, then have a look at what Angel Comedy are doing with their writing gym program. I'm going to be leading one of those. And there's a whole separate Facebook group. And, you know, I don't know much about it. I haven't done it yet. And I'm not telling you when I'm doing it, but it's coming up. So if that appeals to you, have a little look-see online. Thanks to Nathan Wood for editing, producing the show. The music was by Rob Smouten of the band Black Peaches. And it's worth following Black Peaches on Instagram because Rob is quite the, what's the phrase, clothes horse. So check out what Rob is playing and listening to. And thank you once again to him for the music. Your podcast consultant, as ever, is Peter Dobbing. And the logs were done by Jake Crossland. Thanks for listening. I will post-ambulate you after this noise. But otherwise, adieu. Oh, what to talk about. I feel like I've been looking forward to this post-amble. Lots of things must have been happening in my life such that I've noticed myself in the last week think, oh, come, I'll say that in the post-amble. Well, the big news this week is that the Boutros is four. He's 4 years old. The Boutros, if you're a newer listener, is the code name that I give my son so as to preserve his anonymity so that he can do crime. And he's 4 years old. Do you remember when I was on this podcast, on this post-amble, going, hey, guys, I've just had a baby? And I remember, it's such a lovely sort of time to reflect. I remember the night the day he was born, like, I'd been awake for 36 hours. My wife had just been doing some really incredible birthing. And he was out. He was in the world, little grizzly wibbly guy. And as often happens, Dad gets sent home to try and get some sleep. On the way home, it was evening at that point, and I stopped off at the, I believe now, defunct Underground Comedy in Bristol. And because podcast consultant Pete Dobbing co-ran that gig with friend of the pod, Daryl Carrington, and I stopped in to just say, guys, I've just had a baby. And at that time, the headliner had bailed. And so Pete was on the phone talking to the headliner and determining that he was not able to be there. And so he said, can you go on? And I did sort of 35 wobbly improvised minutes. And I've got one of the most fabulous pictures of me on stage. My good friend Andre snapped this perfect picture of me with my head in my hands on stage, somehow getting through this set. What a lovely time that was. And it only just occurs to me now, the headliner who was bailing was the much missed and lamented Ian Cognito. So nice to be reminded of him as well. Lovely Ian. As if anyone called him Ian. Coggy, obviously. So the Boutros is four, and I'm sat recording in my mobile studio. That's my wife's car. Outside of our house, because I've just been assembling a big, hey, here's a good idea for a prezi. This is a, if you've got to buy a present for a small child, my brilliant wife discovered this online. It's a cardboard rocket. It's about 5 foot tall and you assemble it and it's just white and card coloured. And, you can paint it, but you can get in it. It's big enough to get in. It's not expensive. Because it's cardboard. It's just one of those things you go, that is just a good idea. They've taken the concept of the child would rather play with the box than the toy and turn the box into the toy. And I'm saying this absolutely confident that he's going to love it, but it may be that on next week's post-amble I tell you about how poorly it went down. But I've just built it and it's an absolute blinder. It's great. We're planning to fill it with balloons with alien faces drawn on them. This is all a bit cutesy, but I'm full of the joys because my lovely boy is four. And I am, what else is exciting? I'm going to have a phone call with someone who might be going to direct my Edinburgh show, which nearly has a title. And if you're in the Insiders Club, then you will have been privy to me dithering about the title. I never want to do comedy by committee, but it is nice to run it past people and go, I'm thinking about this. Has that joke format of a title ever been done before? There's one title I really want to call it, but there is, you must always, kids, remember, if you're taking a show to the Edinburgh Fringe, Google that word and words like it, plus the term Ed Fringe, just to ensure that in the last few years, nothing massive that you didn't notice had that same title. Or worse, as I discovered, a theatre show has the same title, which I was going to use, so I can't use it anymore, because just my luck, that would become the breakout theatre hit of the Fringe, and you spend the entire time going, not that one. But I'm in title mode now. What did I say? In Corsham, I had this lovely, lovely gig at the Pound Arts Centre in Corsham, and I think I said, and then, oh, no, it was at in Bristol. It's two brilliant new material nights in Bristol. It's at the Kingsdown Vaults, and it's called, I can't remember the name of it, but it's a Sunday night, every Sunday night, free new material. Really good gig. Everyone in the audience was about 12 years old, but apart from that, lovely. There's another one I did, The Rope Walk, which is in Bedminster, which is a fantastic thing run by Dan Hirschbein and Greg, I want to say Winfield, but I'm just not sure. But they're both very funny people. So I was at one of those, and this is the worst anecdote ever. I'm trying to half remember a thing I said that could form a title of the show in order to point out that at the time, at the moment, I am in any word. Like, okay, here's an even more convoluted example to illustrate my point. I was going to read the registration plate of a car next to me in order to go, like, that's the mode I'm in at the moment. I would just read out, for example, YK56TSN. That isn't it. I've changed it, but only just at the last minute. You know, like, I'm honestly at the stage now looking at a car reg and going, potential show title? Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I've got some other great titles I was going to spill there. I've got a title, but I can't use it for another 15 years. But when I do, oh, it's going to be a banger. But it would be foolish to suggest it now in case someone gets there first. That absolutely wasn't their car reg. Don't try and zero in on my location using that information belonging to presumably a neighbour. Edinburgh mode, but I'm in that weird position where, because Primer was great fun last year, that was the new material hour, like work in progress hour I did at Edinburgh last year, constantly changing and growing. Here's the nub and the rub. It was so good doing this show where I had a projector screen attached to a laptop and I was changing the words on the... It was just one title card with about 40 words on it. I changed the words every day. They were just prompts for bits of material. They would change. They would cycle over. Some of them would stay the same. Some of them I'd jiggle the order. Some of them would be completely new. And what it did was it took out of the process any sense of having to remember, because trying to remember a thing is the opposite of being a flowing, functional, thriving comedian, right? I only realised that after the process. I was like, why was that the best show of my life and took the least time to write? It's because I was just constantly flying. I was like Squirrel Boy leaping through the air. Squirrel Boy, is that a thing? I mean a flying squirrel combined with a human. And so it was just a series of leaps. It was all leaping, no umming and ahhing. And I felt like I'd sort of, oh, I've created this thing now. And there's, God, there's so many possibilities if you've got a projector screen. And then I sort of, I had this big, I came out of Edinburgh, I may have talked about this at the time, thinking, why don't I do this for the rest of my life? I've invented my mode of doing it. Why don't I just do this? And now I don't know if I'm retreating. Am I kind of moving beyond it into a refining of that process where I just get all the great flying leaping bits and just tidy them and polish them and make them good? Or am I backing away from a real creative discovery? Am I throwing the baby out with the bathwater? Or am I, in my haste to retain the baby, am I keeping the bath? That this metaphor isn't making it any clearer. Do you see what I mean? Yes, you mean this metaphor isn't making it clearer. Would you believe that I'm re-recording this bit on the next day, midway through the thought? I've had to come in and re-record this because the recording device went wrong and I lost the end of this thought. And I tell you what, listening back to 5 minutes of the absolute garbage I've been spewing at you, I did. What I will say is that I did briefly, as I listened back to me saying, all leaping, no humming and ahhing, I did for a fraction of a second think, potential show title? Oh, my God. So anyway, to round this up, the point is I'm at a creative fork in the road with the existing stuff that made up Primer and could make up a substantial chunk of material and a substantial mode of performance, a substantial kind of theatrical device or a theme, the use of this screen and the fact that once you've got words on a screen, you can change them and manipulate them and put, you know, visual cues and word cues. You can do things. You could change the font to Comic Sans for a split second. Like that, but better, you know. Creative, funny ideas, I mean. So I've kind of got that. And the decision now is, was that a means to freeing me up and just making me realise I'm better when I'm leaping and not trying to remember? Or is that the basis of a new type of how I perform? You know, for a long time, I've developed this idea that I'm kind of a bit of a improvisy, chaotic kind of comedian trapped in the mindset of thinking I have to write perfect jokes that can save me. And I've spent a lot of my career like that. This show had very few perfect jokes in it. And there was little saving going on, and it was impactful. And I came out of it. This is the other thing. I came out of it not knowing whether it had been good or not. I mean, I came out of it knowing it had been funny, but not knowing whether or not it had any emotional resonance. And people would say to me, whoa, that was your most meaningful show. And that reminds me of being an actor, which I found very challenging. And the whole reason I wanted to be a comedian, not the whole reason, but one of the most attractive elements of it, was that it's binary. They laugh or they don't. Brilliant. You know whether it was good or not. You become more of a comedian, you realise, no, you can make them laugh with dogshit material, or they can fail to laugh at something that is brilliant. And look, we can't get into that now, but I think that is the case. I remember being an actor, and the director would say to me, you know, after a show, the director would say, that was your best stuff. And I'd think I'd had a terrible one, or I'd think I'd had my best performance. And the director might say, oh, you're a bit off the boil tonight. It used to drive me mad. And I have a sort of similar tone with this work, this work. I always think of Dr. Brown going, this work that we do, referring to clowning, but in a sort of, I assume, deliberately pretentious way. With this work that I do, guys, by which I mean talking about my children and hopelessness, with this work, is it, I mean, he's not wrong, is it? It's work. It's the work. Is it, what is it? what is it? Is the scaffolding? I used to say at the beginning of Primer, I would always say, it was one of the like three introductory jokes I would always do in some order. I would say, this is what we're doing here is scaffolding. Like you build a rocket. So you build the scaffolding in the shape of the rocket, then you build the rocket inside it, and then the scaffolding falls away and the rocket flies off to entertain a different group of people, right? That was a little joke, sting in the tail sort of thing. This is the question. Was the scaffolding the good bit? Was everyone going, whoa, look at that, scaffolding? No one normally does scaffolding, and he's doing scaffolding really well. Or am I a chump to think that people will sit there and watch scaffolding? There we go. Should have said that 10 minutes ago with no re-records. Goodbye. 10 minutes ago with no re-records. Potential show title?
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.